roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goat. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes here reporting for duty on a Monday. Ready to talk some mixed martial arts with you. Of course, we're going to recap UFC 264, the event of the year so far. Took place this past Saturday here in Las Vegas. Big, big win for Dustin Poirier over Conor McGregor in the main event. We're going to unpack that fight, the whole card, most of it, because I think we're going to spend a lot of time on the main event and everything that happened post-fight. We'll touch on some of the latest news nuggets as well. Ronda Rousey showing some support for Conor McGregor. Habib Nurmagomedov takes home an SB. This guy named Travis Fulton, who had the most fights in mixed martial arts, is no longer with us. An apparent suicide. How about Floyd Mayweather, man? Betting big on Dustin Poirier. 35 G's, I think he took home. And then, of course, McGregor has already had the surgery for the injury he sustained in that fight. It says it's successful. 6 weeks on the crutches, and then he'll be back. So lots to cover there. And then we'll also talk to Chris Moutinho, who lost to Sean O'Malley in the opening bout of the main card of UFC 264. But he won over a lot of people with the gutsy performance that ended in the third round. Herb Dean had decided he had seen enough. So lots to talk about here on a Monday. It's MMA Junkie Radio coming at you here for the next hour on Monday, July 12th. Get to the results. Goes Dustin Poirier defeated Conor McGregor TKO stoppage, doctor stoppage, whatever you want to call it, at the end of round one before round two started. I say that because I had Poirier in round two as a prop bet, even though I had McGregor as my staff pick. I started kind of hedging a little bit towards the end of the week. Maybe I'll have a little bit more time to explain that later, because I really went back and forth on who I thought was going to win this fight all week, all month, since the time it was made. Gilbert Burns defeated Stephen Thompson, unanimous decision, 29-28 across the board. Tied to Tuivasa knocked out Greg Hardy. Round one, like a minute in, Irene Aldana knocked out Yakutiskaya. TKO stoppage there. Nice left hook followed by some ground and pound. Sean O'Malley defeated Chris Moutinho via TKO stoppage, accumulation of punches and kicks. Herb Dean said, enough. Max Griffin defeated Carlos Condit, 29-28, two-time, 30-27, according to one judge. Michelle Pajeda defeated Nico Price. I need the Price goes 29-28 consistently. I don't disagree with that, by the way. Ilia Topuria defeated Ryan Hall, knocked him out. The fuck out, actually. Round one, almost was over when he got him. I don't know what Hall was doing, what kind of strategy he had. Woo, Dricus Duplessis. I don't know, he corrected us. Defeated Trevin Giles, KO punches in round two. Jennifer Maya defeated Jessica I, 29-28, two-time. One judge added 30-27. Nasty cut on Jessica I's forehead, headbutt resulting. What created that gash? Brad Tavares defeated Omari Akhmadov via split decision. Anybody that had Tavares money had to like, oh, man, wait that one out. Tavares did not go to the country music concert. Garth Brooks was in town. That was the plan. He had his boots in the locker room. But he changed his mind, he told me. Zaglas Zumagulov defeated Jerome Rivera via submission in round one. That was the card. I want to thank you all for tuning in to our UFC 264 watch-along this past Saturday. Let's go straight to the top, because that's what everyone wants to talk about. Dustin Poirier defeating Conor McGregor for the second time. The trilogy does not appear to be settled, though. McGregor's already had a surgery, since the fight took place and before this show. Go ahead. Where do you want to start?
Well, I want to start a little bit before, because we haven't really talked much other than on the watch along about what our feelings were after press conference, after weigh-ins. I think George and I, we both turned in Connor as our staff pick, and I felt pretty good about that pick up until the press conference. That's when the doubt started, and you could tell one of them two was going to have get shook a little bit. And it looked like before anything even started, it looked like Conor McGregor was already kind of uneasy being in that situation. It turned me off a lot, man, as far as what was going on in their heads. And that seemed like it played out a little bit in the fight, and not to mention after the fight, where he just completely had a meltdown. But the fight itself was entertaining. It looked more like the second fight, I think, than it did the first fight, with Conor going after that guillotine, which really put him in a bad spot. But there's so many ways to interpret this fight. You know, was his leg already just kind of hurting him, and that's why he went for it? Because really, that's very low fight IQ, right, to go after that neck against Dustin Poirier. But Dustin took advantage of everything, and you got to give him mad props on his performance. He looked good. He looked good physically, mentally. He said all the right things. I can't say that about Conor McGregor, though.
Okay, so going back to last week, I turned in Conor McGregor as my pick early in the week. And as the week went by, I never felt comfortable turning it in. Very easily, somebody could have said, "Are you sure?" And I probably said, "Okay, put down Poirier." That's how close I was, back and forth. But I was also, I know that many of the times when I've done this, I'm more mad when I go against my gut feeling. And that's why I kept sticking to my guns. You know, McGregor has made adjustments in the past to his fighting style. They've had that mantra, win or learn, you know, humble in defeat, which, by the way, all that went out the window this weekend. And I didn't care that the nasty side was coming out. I was kind of glad, honestly. I think you could still be nasty and not involve the wives. And I think you could still tell somebody they're going out on a stretcher, but you don't have to say they're going out on a coffin, you know, like you can definitely push your predictions, your narrative, your storytelling, whatever, your trash talk, but there's limits. But yeah, we had the press conference on Thursday. He seemed uneasy. And I don't care about the pacing back and forth. I don't care about him grabbing the hot sauce. I don't care about him kicking them. What I cared about was when he talked and he looked up at the screen. He was so concerned, I think, with how he was coming across. And that shows me like this
insecurity.
Insecurity, a mental weakness. And remember, fighting is so mental on Saturday night. Poirier, cool as a cucumber. A couple times he had some zingers. McGregor sleep. I knocked you out. You know, and then those times where halfway he'd stop and just kind of like, you know, and then even Conor McGregor said, "Hey, you changed camps. You left Louisiana." Same thing. He wanted to say something. He didn't. He just knew that I'm not going to engage in verbal warfare. I'm not the best at it. You're right. But I did knock you out 6 months ago. He still had that in his back pocket. And so McGregor was uneasy, but, you know, I stuck to my guns. Then Friday, the weigh-ins, they both look good. They both really look like they did a great job with their camps and everything like that. So I knew we were going to have a good fight if it went all 25 minutes. But again, man, just, you know, Joe Rogan asked him what's going to happen. And, you know, same thing, like he's pushing those boundaries that are unnecessary. We want to see someone get their ass kicked as fans. As media, we say we want to see, you know, athletic competition and may the best man win. But we're thinking someone's going to get their ass kicked. You know, we're just a little bit more kinder in saying that. But fans want to see someone get their ass kicked, and that's it. Coffin? Nah. Leg breaks like that? Nah. Because we want the loser to shake things off. And when they're ready to compete again, come back when it's safe. You know, if you've had a concussion or any type of an injury, or maybe it just stings, you know, because you lost to a rival. But we don't want what we want, what we saw on Saturday night.
2021 have been horrible.
Oh, horrific. John Anik named off a few. I named off a few on Spinning Back Lick last week or the week before. It was, I can't believe how many gruesome injuries we've seen. You know, Jacare and Chris Weidman.
Jamal Hill.
The Japanese young lady, too. She looked like she had her dislocation or something. Jamal Hill, yeah. And so now I add this one to the bunch, right? Anyway, we get to Saturday, and again, goes. I was uneasy going into it. But when the fight started and McGregor came out, McGregor, like usual, just puts on a show. The walkout, the pacing back and forth, no touching gloves, and then he just pushes the action, you know? And I loved it. But even though he had some really nice kicks to the thigh, he had some spinning kicks to the body, he was throwing nice one-twos, caught him with one, Poirier said, missed on a few others. I just loved – I think he looks fluid, you know, and all that other stuff. Now the talk, the coffins, the DMs, it doesn't matter because now they're actually competing. But then when as I was watching Poirier, he was shaking a lot of that off, no problem. Covering up when he needed to, depending on what side Conor was attacking from, you know, brushing things off. He looked confident. The game looked like it was in slow motion to Poirier, which means he was prepared, calm. He wasn't intimidated. And so even though McGregor was putting together a decent round one, and remember, in Abu Dhabi, he won round one. Even though things were coming together nicely, Poirier didn't seem too concerned. Then Poirier, a couple minutes in, finally has this like a four-piece combo where he explodes in on him, and three of them landed nicely, you know, and backed up McGregor. And once again, McGregor has this tendency to, rather than clear the cobwebs or use his footwork to create enough space, you know, sometimes they'll create space, shake down their arms and relax a little bit, and then engage again. Mm-hmm. On your turn, rather than, you know, being on the defensive, rather than do that, he kind of closed quarters real quick and kind of locked up with him. So two things here. One, McGregor, I think, said first one to take the fight to the ground or to not want to stand is a bitch or whatever. But he tends to do that a few times, you know, when things aren't going the way. So when he's that hammer, he'll hammer you. But when he starts to be the nail, he just has these crutches, you know, that he does. But anyway, they stay where they're at, and eventually they find themselves near the cage. And why he elected to go for the guillotine, he may have been working on it. He may have a pretty good one in practice, but he's facing another world-class fighter, not a training partner who will kind of let you do some of these things or maybe not good. I mean, he's a black belt. Black belts get submitted. But still, that's not the point. That's not the place for it. McGregor's money is his left hand, you know, his hands, his kicks. His submission games, he just finished saying that, man. I only count KO wins. You know, I'm 19-1. But he decides to go for it. But now, when we get to the end of the fight, I look back and think, was he already feeling something in the leg? And that's why maybe he decided to lock up or maybe attack his neck. Because as it was happening, remember I mentioned he was kicking him in the thigh? Mm-hmm. He would kick him in the thigh, and a couple of them were really nice. But then he also would go with the teep kick or the front kick or the push kick, you know, whatever variation of calling it what you want. And when he did it a couple times, Poirier had some really nice defense. You know, he would actually bring his arms down and block it. And now in watching a couple of those in the first minute, because I've seen the fight about 20 times now, in seeing that in the first round he blocked it, and then – after they got up with like 12 seconds to go, same thing. He blocked it again, and he was using his elbow to block that bone, you know, that bone inside the shin bone, you know, the tibia and the fibula. And I'm mm-hmm. thinking that all of this, even with that kick that came up short that DC talked about, it was just creating stress on that bone. Kavanaugh talked about an ankle injury, although he said that the doctor didn't find anything when they scanned it, anything of significance. But I'm thinking all that added up, and so when he stepped, he just didn't have the support, and then it broke. But I think there was something to Poirier's checks with the elbow, maybe the one with the knee. I've been watching McGregor step gingerly, you know, and eventually we got to the point where you know, that's what happened. But, was it a great fight for one round? Sure it was. I wanted to see more in round two, but make no mistake, the best of McGregor was already passing us by at that point. You know, he's not a stronger fighter towards the end. He's only shown me that in the Nate Diaz fight that he gets stronger as the fight goes. I guess you could make an argument for him winning round three against Khabib Nurmagomedov, but Khabib didn't look like someone who was defeated in round three, but rather someone that maybe was just biding his time, you know, because he had done a lot in rounds one and two, and then eventually just walloped him in round four. So who knows, man? Yeah. Now, did you want to add anything to that? I know our guest is a little bit early. We're going to get to him in just a sec, but do you want to add anything to just what I said?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Usually he's not a guy that really builds momentum as the fight goes. Here and there, he's had moments, but I think we all just felt like it was more than likely going to go down the same right, down the same route. So I feel like there was a conclusion to Saturday night. A lot of people are going to say no, and they're going to ask for that fourth fight. You know the UFC is going to ask for it because it's a big money fight, but make no mistake, I mean, Conor McGregor's got to win a fight before he can do that. And this is a division where there just aren't easy fights, right? Like, everybody is tough. So it's two losses in a row. He's got to do something, depending on what Dustin Poirier does on his side, because we know his hands are going to be full. I don't know if we're going to see that fourth fight, if we're going to see it anytime soon. I think it's going to take a little bit more than just hear us out. This is what we're doing this time.
Yeah, I think there was a conclusion. I think Poirier had techniques with his blocks and his checks that led to him hurting himself. Conor McGregor did, you know?
Yeah.
So even though we didn't get a referee interceding in the action and him making the decision to stop it that way, you could hear Conor screaming for doctor stoppage, doctor stoppage, doctor stoppage. I don't think a leg breaks like that just from the other party not having anything to do with it, from just stepping wrong. You know, you can twist your ankle. I've seen that in basketball when they jump up high and you land on someone else's foot and then the foot turns. Well, wearing high tops, by the way. I've seen that. But an actual leg break just from stepping forward and stepping back, no, that happened because of a reason. But do they want to paint the picture for a possibility of a fourth fight? I mean, sure. If they're going to do that, and all three parties want to do it, cool. But media and fans are going to really want, obviously, Charlie Olives versus Poirier first. And plus, McGregor still has a long time to recover. And then I think people are going to want to see McGregor probably have to fight one time before he gets to Poirier. Because whoever wins, especially if it's Poirier, there are other people charging up the hill to get a shot at the title. You know what I mean? You got to give respect to those fighters, too. Your Makachevs, your RDAs, your Beneil Dariush's, Gaethje's, Chandler's, they're going to want something as well. And so, and it may behoove Conor McGregor to take a fight. I don't want to say tune-up because then if you throw the other name, then it sounds disrespectful to the other name, but just the fight to feel out where he's at. You know what I mean?
Put your mind somewhere else.
He's no longer the top dog, so he kind of has to, you know, do that. That's kind of what he did with Cowboy. He was willing to take that fight. So let's see. All right, let's get to our guest, man. I'm anxious to talk to Chris Moutinho, and we can continue with our unpacking of UFC 264 later on in the program. Chris Moutinho debuted in the UFC this past Saturday against Sean O'Malley. He was the young fellow with the green hair who would not stop, kept coming forward to Sean O'Malley, attacking with hands and kicks. He really, really brought the crowd out of their seat. He gained so much respect and a lot of traction this past Saturday when a lot of us, including me, we were like, why'd you bring this guy in when you could have, you know, Stamen and whoever else. But as the fight was unfolding, I was like, hey, give me some of that crow. He started eating some of that crow. Because the kid came to fight, man. And I'm lucky that he's doing our show. Congrats on a fabulous debut this past Saturday against one of the top bantamweights in the world. You did it on short notice. You did it with everyone doubting you. And you proved a lot of people wrong. Not only did you prove you belong in there with top 35ers, but that you actually belong in the UFC. So great on you this past Saturday. I'm glad they rewarded you with an extra 75 Gs too.
Yeah, man. No, it's a great feeling, man. I've been trying to tell the world, tell everybody that I can hang with these guys and that I'm good enough to be here, man. It's just good good to finally hear from other people, you know?
Yeah, most definitely. So tell us, let's take us maybe round by round. You know, you get in there in round one and you went at him right away. But with you taking the fight on short notice, did you feel like, hey, if I'm going to do something, I got to get it done early, or maybe flip the script and back him up, get in his head? Because I really loved your bravado. You know, you were talking with your body, with your actions, but also with your words. You know, it looked like you caught him off guard.
This is just the way I fight, man. I'm always going forward. I'm always pushing the pace, and I don't believe in being out of shape, man. I don't believe that I had to get it done early. I don't believe I had to get it done late. You know what I mean? I'm always in shape to go 25, 30 minutes in a fight. And I knew I was going to be the guy in the better shape. And I pretty much showed that, man. He was tired in that fight. Regardless if he was landing the punches, he was landing the shots, the more shots. I wasn't setting up my shots well enough. I wasn't fainting. I wasn't doing anything. I was trying to get into a bar brawl. You know what I mean? It was on 10 days notice. I didn't really think about what I should do to set up my shots. I kind of just wanted to hit them in, and that's what you guys saw.
In round one, you had success with leg kicks, something you didn't do as much in rounds two and three. But you're right. We did see him slow. The announcers were saying that he was maybe looking up at the clock. What were you sensing towards the end of round one and as you were getting to round two? What was working or what wasn't? And did you ever just have like a brain fog, or even these UFC octagon jitters that first-time fighters have?
No, man, the fight felt like every other fight. Like, realistically, once we got into the fight part, the stuff that kind of got to me was all the media and stuff that I'm not really used to dealing with at this kind of level, man. We have, like, in the lower circuit, there's small little pockets of that, but it's nothing like this. No extravagance to it. So that was the part that kind of got me. But the fighting is what I love to do, man. I love to fight. I love to hit each other. I love to get hit. I love to know what this feeling is, to see who I am as a man and see how you are as a man. I asked him in the fight at one point. I was like, "You're tired, bro. I can see it. You're tired." And he was like, "Yeah." So I know I got to the dude, and I know that he's going to remember me for the rest of his life. He's never going to want to fight me again. And if he does, man, there's a lot of different things I'm going to do in this fight if I ever have to fight him again, man. The leg kicks were working. I was landing a lot of leg kicks. I just should have kept going with them. My hands, I have to set them up with my feints. I have to move. There's a lot of stuff me and my coaches are going to work on, and we're going to get better for this. And the next time we go, and it could be up 35, it could be at 25, who knows, but we're just going to get better and keep going, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, we'll get to round three and the stoppage in just a second, but I also wanted to ask, you should have asked you, cause I want to go in chronological order. Were you consumed at all by the event and just, or were you more like just happy? Like I enjoyed watching you on Embedded, signing the posters. And then you had this like innocence to it all. Like, you know, like a kid, you know, like a kid fulfilling a dream is what I'm trying to say. Of course, you're a young man and you're a professional and you deserve to be there. But you know what I mean? Like, I really love the innocence of it all. But because a few nights later, I got to see what a badass MF-er you were. You know what I mean? But can you talk about just that week and how it was even before the fight started?
This week was so fast, and there was so much to do, man. I couldn't really enjoy it as much as I would have liked to. You know what I mean? This was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me, man. This thing is something I've been dreaming of doing for so long in my life, man. Since I was 20 years old. I'm 28 now, so it's such a crazy thing that it finally happened in the way it happened. I couldn't really enjoy it because there's so much to do in such a short amount of time. So the next time I feel like I'll have a little bit more time to like embrace it and it really, really let it soak into my soul and really be able to enjoy the whole experience. But man, this was great, man. I got everything that I ever thought that this sport would be, and realized that I was already good enough to be here, man. My soul, and I know what this is like. I was around guys that were doing this for so long, and at this level, man. My first coach was George Rivera. He was in the UFC for 10 plus years, and I was around guys like Joe Lozon and see all these guys and see how they have to handle themselves and grow up in this sport. And I knew what I had to do to be here, and I knew I was going to be ready when I got here.
Chris, I want to echo what George said. I mean, to me, I know there's an L on the record, but I feel like we're talking to a winner right now. The crowd was going nuts. I think you did some pretty amazing things out there. I do want to talk about the end of the fight. That's something that a lot of people were upset with. They thought it got stopped a little too soon. Have you had a chance to go back and watch the fight? Can you give us your thoughts on the fight and the ending?
Yeah. No, I definitely think it was stopped too soon. Man, I'm not going to sit here and bash Herb Dean because he seems like a really great guy. Man, he seems like a really great ref, and he definitely knows what he's doing. I've seen him make a lot of really good calls, and sometimes you make bad ones, man. I've seen dudes look like they're going to die in that cage and not get stopped. You can go watch the Rory McDonald fight where he got his face smashed, the Robbie Lawler fight. Robbie Lawler fight where he went 4.5 rounds with his face smashed into a bloody mess, and they didn't stop that fight. So I had 30 seconds left, man. You should have let me go out of my shield. If I was going to go out, man, I was still throwing punches. I was still standing there. So, yeah, I'm a little upset about that, man. But if it went to decision, I would have lost the fight. So it doesn't really matter to me, man. A loss is a loss to me. I'm a very competitive person, and I understand, like, everybody's talking to me like, man, don't be – it was 10 days' notice. Don't be upset about the loss. I'm always upset about a loss, man. I'm a man. I got pride, and I got a big heart, man, and it hurts to lose. I wanted his face, and I wanted his head on my wall. And I'll get back, and we'll grow, and we'll get better, and the next guy is going to have to pay for it.
You know, the situation that you're in now is so different than where you were, say, a month ago. At what point do you think the anger from the loss will go away, and you'll now start to focus on where you're at and what could possibly come? Like, if you were to lay out what the rest of the year could look like for you, what would you like from the UFC?
The next few months is going to be real big on just setting up my businesses and setting up things that I need to do to be able to make money during this time and make money from this event. You know what I mean? There's going to be a lot of things going on, but from the sport, man, I'm already okay, man. I already know what I have to do for the next one. I'm already in process of training again and getting myself ready for the next one. I'm going to take the next 6-7 months and just get better, better and better and better. And when I get back into the cage, maybe the beginning of next year or a little after that, it's going to be a whole different person than you saw this time. It's going to be the same pressure, same high pace fight, but I'm going for the finish and I'm going to win, man.
Is there maybe one conversation that you had after the fight, whether it be a family member, someone from the UFC, or even Sean, if you spoke to him, was there one that stuck in your head that you just think of over and over that really affected you?
The only person I was focusing on after the fight was my girlfriend, man. She's done so much for me this whole camp, man. The whole camp. And talking to all the UFC people for me, so I didn't have to, man. I didn't have to deal with all this stuff while I was trying to get myself ready to make weight in 10 days. I don't know what about anybody else, man. I'm not the biggest 35er, but that's still not an easy cut for me. Not an easy cut for me to make cut 20 pounds in 10 days and try to be there and feel good and feel in shape and feel ready to go to war. You know what I mean? It was a lot of mental strain and a lot of mental struggle to try to go in there and just get my body into what I want to do, man. This is what I love to do, man. I love to fight and I love to put on a show for everybody. And I'm going into the UFC to every fight I have from here on out will be the fight of the night. I'm going to break that record, whatever that record is. It's 13 fights, 14 fights, and it's going to be consecutive. Every time I step in that cage, it'll be a win and it will be fight of the night from here on out.
You definitely did say that. Fight of the night was headed our way, and you got it. Any plans on that 75 Gs? Are you a conservative fella? Is it going into the bank, or can you think of one fun thing you can do with it?
Most of it's going to go into my stomach, man. I'm a fat boy at heart, bro. For real, like I just eat, man. I don't buy fancy clothes and fancy things, man. I'm gonna save most of it and try not to end up broke after this. You know what I mean? I don't want to have to do anything else ever again, man. I want to be a fighter and set myself up to do this for the rest of my life. And that's what I'm going for right now, man. Just trying to do this for the rest of my life.
What's your meal of choice? What's the first one you're going to get into, really? Like, you know,
we, We had some ramen last night. I had some McDonald's today, man. We're just going to go down the whole nasty list of just every disgusting thing you could possibly think of, man. I'm a terrible person. I'm terrible.
Chris, you want $75,000, not $75. Ramen on your first meal? Get out to a steak, brother.
No, this wasn't like – this ain't like packets of ramen, bro. This was like at a restaurant and stuff. But
McDonald's. That's why. I was like, man.
Nah, this wasn't no packet of ramen, but I'm disgusting. I'm telling you, I'm gross. I'm horrible. Like, if you like saw what I eat on a daily basis, it's bad, man. It's bad. So like, I like trash food. I don't know what's wrong with me, but we'll adapt. We'll culture ourselves eventually.
So you did tease that maybe 25 could be in your future. I noticed you haven't. You know, I'm back to look at your fights, and it's been bantam. But have you been playing with house money because you've been successful as a bantam? You figured, okay, I'm just going to ride this for a while. How realistic is 25?
It's pretty realistic, man. I used to fight 25 when I was in the amateurs. When I started my career, I was a 25er. I was a lot younger, so it came off a lot easier. But now that I have these the UFC dietitians and everything, I'm gonna try to get out there and talk to them and see what I have to do, man. Right now it's just been so hard with just doing it myself and trying to meal prep and figure out what I have to do to make the weight. It's just something that I've never had the ability to have the tools to do it. You know what I mean? So now that I have them, maybe I'll make it. Maybe I won't. We'll see after I talk to them.
Thanks for hopping on with us on a Monday after this fight that you had, which, you know, you guys really, really went at it, man. I love the cartoons that I'm seeing, you know, the memes and things like that. You with the zombie and the hammer, it's amazing. You got a lot of love from – I hope you heard the fight, watched it over a few times, the commentators. Twitter was blowing up. A lot of people respect the hell out of you and your performance on Saturday night, including us too.
No, I appreciate you guys, man. Thank you guys for having me on and allowing me to get my name out there and keep growing this thing that I love so much, man. Yeah, it's been cool, man. It's been cool. It's not something I thought, especially after the way it was at the beginning of this fight, man. I was getting a lot of DMs telling me I was going to get killed and I was going to die taking this fight. So it's cool to see how all the people switched up. But I'm just excited to see where this can go.
We're excited to see you too. Thanks for the time, Chris. Enjoy the rest of your day.
God bless.
All right, we'll see you. All right, there we have it, Chris Moutinho. You know, he delivered not only with his fight goes. I thought he was really, really cool here, man. I like
that. Yeah. Do you want some behind the scenes stuff?
Sure.
During one of your last questions, you ever do that burp? Where you don't like burp out, but just kind of comes up. I don't know what the hell happened, dude, but it felt like acid or fire was so much that I had no breath, and my eyes felt like they were gonna shoot out of, like I was just like poison came out of my body, and I thought I was gonna have one of them choke attacks or something. Like I didn't know what I was gonna do, and luckily I was just able to calm down, and the breath came back. And my eyes went blurry. Like they came back. I've never burped like that in my life. I don't know what the hell is in my body right now, but I need to get it out. But I was scared, dude. I didn't know what to do. I think I was just going to leave you there. It still hurts.
Well, I'm glad that didn't happen or your eyes did pop out. I know we would have gone viral, so that would have been taken off of the team. Sure. But yeah. I would have never imagined that someone would look worse than Chris Moutinho. After his spot right now. He's starting to heal up, though. I thought he was going to really look even worse. A lot of damage, you know. And I guess I would politely disagree now that I've come down a little bit because I obviously have a lot of adrenaline on fight night, too. When the many times that we've spoken to refs, the refs put themselves in a position that when the fight starts, obviously they're officiating in a manner in which they're keeping the fighters safe, looking for fouls, and trying to observe – you know, in what direction they should be casting most of their attention to. And in the third round, you did see Herb, and a lot of these refs have it where they kind of start to cower a little closer after they see some sort of a a strike that connects, you know, something, whether it's an elbow, a knee, they show a lot more concern, and you'll see them looking towards the eyes of the party that's been struck, you know. Mm-hmm. So in rewatching this fight as well, I noticed that before he got to that point that he stopped it, he took a quick look at Moutinho, because remember, there's cumulative damage that's telling Herb, this is the injured party, this is the party I need to watch more, you know, because this is the one that might go out. Respect to Moutinho, because he was landing a few punches that were catching O'Malley. And remember, with Foreman's gloves, anything can happen. But I think most of his concern was towards Moutinho. And then in that last sequence, not only does he get hit, Herb talks to him, telling him, you know, I want to see something or something like that. Because now Moutinho is taking the shots and he's taking them a little bit more flush. And remember, I think a lot of us would have been like, oh, man, if Moutinho actually got iced. You know, those concussions are the worst. Those KOs are the worst. And we often say it, oh, he didn't go out all the way. She didn't go out all the way. You know, they got to him in time before that happens. And so Herb crouches down, communicates with him. A few more strikes come in, and then I think he just thought, no, I got to live. Let this guy live to fight another day. Maybe at 25, you know, maybe with him having notice instead of 10-day notice and not having to cut 20 pounds, he's probably taking all that information in and then applying it to the competition that he's seeing. I kind of have no problem with what he did. Maybe that day I may have said, oh, no, you know, but in reality, even Chris just said, I was headed probably towards the decision that I was going to lose. So in 30 seconds, could he possibly win the fight? By KO, sure. Jairzinho got over him with 5 seconds left. DJ, mm-hmm. I think, submitted was it War? No, I forget. Somebody with like one – I think it was the Japanese fellow. With 1 second left, he was dominating that fight, by the way, whereas Jairzinho was losing it. With 15 seconds left, I think Lewis got Volkov. So, yeah, stuff can happen within the last 30 seconds, but – again, this was a fighter that was, you know, that had taken some strikes. And I think Herb, we got to trust those 20 plus years of officiating, man. You got to. This guy's competed, Herb Dean. He's judged and reffed. He's got a lot of experience in big fights. He did the title fight, for crying out loud, you know, and he also did this fight, which was, you know, the first fight on the main card. You just got to trust in Herb.
It's not his job to make decisions based off the clock. It's whether he feels like you can compete or not, right? And it was just a cumulative barrage of punches that he'd taken throughout the fight. Head was probably snapping back a little bit more, you know, his reaction times. Look, I hate to get morbid, but you know, you talk to Kevin Ioli and look how many people have passed away in front of him because of, in boxing, just taking them shots over and over. That's something that would have to be on Herb Dean's conscience. And I think I'm okay with him making that decision. You never know what can come out of these. I mean, think about just if you're in a car wreck, think about how you feel the next day. This is like 3 car wrecks. You know what I mean? So,
Moutinho isn't going to gain any more respect or admiration for the last 30 seconds. He would have gotten a nice pop from the audience, but he had already gotten the audience's approval and respect and admiration as well. It just would have been a real, real chance to, you know, standing ovation type thing. Kind of like when the player on a basketball team that's getting crushed by 20 and the series is about to end, the coach will call a timeout so that they can kind of come out and get a nice round of applause. Kind of like something like that, I suppose. Mm-hmm. That's all kind of like you know, it's not anything that really matters at the end of your career. It's just some sort of instant glorification and admiration, and it's nice. But he had already gotten it, and I don't have a problem with Herb's call. If Herb had let it go, and it just ended in a decision, okay. But if Herb had let it go, and then all of a sudden this guy took something vicious at the very end, I think we all would have been like, oh man, and that really would have ruined my night, I think. Whereas I had such a warm, fuzzy feeling after that fight. And then next up, I think, was Aldana and Kunitskaya. And I got a beautiful I don't know if you noticed, but Aldana had this like feint with the right, and then boom, caught her with the left hook, put kind of this guy down, and she got the finish. Of course, sucked that she didn't make weight. She was the only fighter that didn't make weight. And I like Jana Kuniskaya, but I had a lot of respect for that finishing sequence there, you know. And then we get to the heavyweights, and of course that was like it's like a street fight, man. For a minute they went at it, you know. And then that ended pretty viciously. And then we get to Burns and Stephen Thompson. So anyway, let's get back to McGregor and Poirier. You know, we've kind of already talked about, I guess, the ending, or I forget where we took off from there. But anything else you want to add? You know that he's had successful surgery. He's still not backing off. You know that he's coming after Poirier. He wants the fourth fight. You know, he's thinking that Poirier shouldn't really take much from that win. I don't know. He's kind of sounding like a sore loser, honestly.
Oh, definitely. You know, like even the comments afterwards were just horrific for anyone. I mean, it would be really hard to get people to boo Conor McGregor before that fight in that arena, but they were actually booing towards the end. So that it takes a lot to do that, and he just crossed a lot of lines. But I'm thinking about like what he does next. And if it were you, we all know the gigantic paydays that he's cashed throughout his career, especially the Floyd Mayweather one. With this one, which I imagine is going to be another big payday, now going through what he's been through in his life, in his career, he wasn't knocked out, but he was probably concussed at some point. Those are some pretty big elbows that were landing. How long do you want to keep doing this? You know what I mean? Like, you've already won belts. You're going to be a Hall of Famer. You've made a ton of money. Do you really want to risk brain damage, more gruesome injuries? For what? You know, I think if I'm him, I might walk away.
Here's you? The problem. It should have happened already when he beat Alvarez. If he wanted, like, the perfect scenario, champ, you know, that would have been it. But, you know, he has made some big money with the Floyd fight, mm-hmm. and then the Khabib fight.
Diaz.
But Diaz was before Alvarez. So once he already evened the score up with Diaz and he beat Alvarez, if he was looking for a perfect ending, I think he definitely wants to go out on top is what I'm trying to say. All right? So what he can do is heal up and try and fight Poirier if Poirier beats Oliveira.
Off of two losses, though?
I know. It sounds ridiculous. But for Conor McGregor, I bet you he's already thinking, if Poirier can beat Oliveira and I can fight Poirier to even the score at 2-2 and win the title and walk away with the title, I'll bounce because I got a lot of money. But no one gets one over on me. I don't leave without being the top dog. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. that's, I think, what's thing. That's why he wanted Khabib so bad. He didn't want him to retire, and he kept, you know, talking some smack, things like that. And then, there comes a time where I think you just run out of that type of energy. You come down a little bit, your ego takes the night off or the week off, and you're like, well, he's gone, but now I'm going to handle the business of whatever's here. And then Poirier ruins that at UFC 257 in January. All right, well, let's get it back with Poirier, because I know I can take down Poirier. I'll win the trilogy, and then I'll come up after Charlie Olives. And then I guess if I can draw out Khabib, great, but if not, then maybe I retire on top. But right now, he's just going to get caught in the vicious circle of he can't retire like this. There's no way. Even with all that money, he's even said, he goes, I don't even care about the money in the houses. I love competing. And I think that's even kind of like a cover-up. I think it's just I have a massive ego. I need to be regarded as the best somehow. You know what I mean? Even if it's just with what I did back in 2016 when I became a champ. And if I can finish strong, I will somehow be involved in – always be involved in the conversation of the MMA gods, because Khabib's the best lightweight of all time. So even if Conor comes back to win it, he's not the best lightweight of all time. But what he can say is, I won two titles, Khabib, you never did. Therefore, I'm in the conversation of the GOATs, you know, or whatever. But see, all mm-hmm. that started kind of like fizzle away. Anderson Silva didn't have that type of an ego. George St. Pierre hasn't had that type of an ego. Conor does have that type of an ego. And I think that's what he needs to wrestle with and figure out, you know. But I thought usually losses humbled them, and they haven't. So I don't know what we're going to do now with this kid, because nothing seems to be stopping him. And you're right, because have a go at Dustin all you want, but calling the wife a hoe, you know, and implying that the DMs or whatever they may be, and I think he said something about her appearance. Just that's just terrible, man. Terrible. P-head, okay. His clothing, okay. Even Hillbilly, which seems to be a reach. If you watched enough of the programming, there are no hillbillies in Lafayette, you know. I think is what Cormier was saying. But, you know, all that other personal stuff, just no good, you know. Stick to stretchers, not coffins. Stick to your opponent, not your opponent's significant other and kids or whatever.
It's just really, really low class. And I think not only does Conor McGregor need to look at himself in the mirror, but the people around him probably need to do that too. Because if it were me, I would probably either need him to say, I'm going to stop doing that, or apologize. But I don't know that I can put my arm around someone and go, hey, this is my guy right here. See what he does here? And me and him, you know, all day, we're buddies. Like, I wouldn't be able to do that, man. You're my brother. It would be tough for me to stick up for you saying something like that. At some point, I got to go, yeah, my brother's stupid, man. I don't know what the fuck he's thinking, but I'm getting away from that fool. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That people around him need to take a look at themselves, too.
I don't know John Kavanaugh, but I do know Adi Attar, and I think those are the two that can possibly have that type of conversation with him. You know, Adi Attar is his manager, longtime manager. And John Kavanaugh's his longtime trainer. He's actually split from Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh's shared that before. For a time, you know, not like split and done, you know, not done fights together. Just haven't talked for long periods of time. I think he's always in contact, though, with Adi Attar. And I think Adi has dealt with enough athletes in different sports. This one definitely is a lot different from others, but I think they can figure it out. You know, I think they got to be able to figure it out. I mean, we're not saying like change your personality completely. We're just saying curb it a little. He used to be witty, charming, you know. And again, once the fight starts, he's a badass, dude. There's no way around it. Conor McGregor's a badass. His fights, you are on the edge of your seat because of the way he doesn't. He goes 0 to 60, takes it up to 90, and the fight stays at 90. Maybe hits 120 at some point. They are over the speed limit by a lot. There is no feeling out process. There's no stalling. There's none of that. It's just constant action, you know. And that's why everyone loves to see the walkout. They don't want to miss anything. The prep point, the pacing back and forth while Poirier comes out. Even getting in Poirier's face as Poirier first just got in and they got to get extra security in there. All that's money, man. He knows how to do it like no one else. But it's MMA, man, and once the game starts, there's a winner and a loser, and we're not stupid. The rest of us aren't stupid. As big and powerful and rich as you are, we're not stupid. We watched the fight, and you lost, and that's it. So start rebuilding. Figure it out. Figure out what you got to say, but, you know, don't be myopic and not see what's around us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, terrible.
I don't know. What did you think of Gilbert Burns versus Stephen Thompson?
That was another fight. So the top two fights, I had a pick going in, but you could have easily swayed me to go the other way. I had turned in Gilbert Burns as my pick. But the more and more I heard from people and the points that were being made, I thought Stephen Thompson could have had a better performance. However, Gilbert Burns was just the badass that he normally is. You know, he was a very, very smart fighter. He took advantage of situations that benefited him, and he won the fight. I thought it was an okay fight, especially considering some of the fights that we've seen with Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. It's just his style, you know. It's sometimes it can be great, sometimes not so much. But it was an okay fight. I thought Gilbert Burns did great. I thought he looked good in a win. Even if Stephen Thompson would have came back and somehow won that fight, I don't know that it's the type of performance that would catapult you or anything like that. So I thought it was a good night for Gilbert Burns.
Yeah, I thought it was – I mean, look, we knew that if Gilbert Burns won, it probably wasn't going to be exciting. You just can't win in an exciting fashion over Stephen Thompson unless you pull an Anthony Pettis. And that was beautiful what he did. You know, he gave his first KO loss. He's just hard to touch personally, you know. But Gilbert Burns, I fought tactical. And basically, that's a perfect word. I mean, he had a certain game plan that needed to be accomplished. Standing was going to be very, very difficult because, A, Stephen Thompson can strike, you know, and, B, there's not many exchanges because he's a chess player. So you were going to have to hope that even if you got the best of them, that the judges still saw it to give you a 10 and give him a 9 from the little that, you know, they were going to write, that the little that they were going to compute in coming up with their decision, because there's just not much action even on the feet, even if it remains standing. Burns knew that he needed to he had amazing jiu-jitsu, obviously, but he needed to use wrestling to put himself in a position to get to these spots, you know, and that takes time. 5 minutes seems like forever at times, and then there's times where the clock just winds, and especially in Thompson's fights, the clock just winds, and it, next thing you know, it's 30-27, you lost, or 29-28, you lost. But Burns, I thought, did enough to strike and use feints and setups, and then he had some deep shots into a leg, into a single. He had some adjustments as well. But then eventually he got Stephen Thompson down. He was able to keep him down. No submissions or anything, but I think Burns, it's too bad he was getting booed. That's the casual fan out there. Because Stephen Thompson is such a hard out that you're never going to look exciting, but he got the job done. Think about how many fighters have not been able to get the job done, and he got the job done. And that's a nice bounce back after losing the title. You know, and this is a guy that, again, is putting the ego in check and saying, I mean, of course I want to fight for the title. But I just fought for the title, and I realized there's all kinds of monsters here. So he did the right thing. He threw out a few names: Diaz, Edwards, Masvidal. I think Edwards and Masvidal are going to get paired up, and I'm not sure. I still want to see Diaz at welterweight, honestly, and I'm not even sure Diaz wants to fight a guy like Gilbert Burns. Who knows? But I think Gilbert Burns should be proud of his performance, man.
Yeah, it's a good performance, and it puts him in a nice little spot, but unfortunately, it's not the top spot. I think he's going to have to watch that play out. And then depending on how that fight goes, maybe he could slip in. But he did about as well as he could against Wonder Boy.
Yep. He tried to knock him out, but he got staggered a few times by Wonder Boy too.
Yeah.
You know, Wonder Boy's counter-striking. So I think he realized, I might be giving it all away. I got to get to my wrestling, and I got to have confidence in this and get the job done, because – striking is very, very dangerous against this guy as well. Tai Tuivasa defeated Greg Hardy. Hardy hit him on the side of the head and wobbled him, took his legs out of him. Tuivasa said usually he would just engage, but he didn't want to make a mistake, and so he composed himself and then was able to come back, have a nice sequence of punches there where he caught Hardy, and then he finished him up with some follow-ups. What did you think of that fight?
You know what? That's a fight that I kind of saw going that way. The thing about Greg Hardy is he puts the time in the gym. He tries to get better at what he does, and I respect him for that. I may not like him too much as a person, but everything as far as mixed martial arts goes, he does try to get better, and he does put effort in. But the one thing we said before that fight started was he couldn't get over aggressive, because that's where Tai Tuivasa catches you. And that's what he did. And I respect him for smelling blood. But the way he came forward, knowing that Tai Tuivasa can hit as hard as he does, I think he's just going to go back and watch it and probably go, damn, I probably could have slowed things down a little bit and picked my shots a little better. But that's a rough one. I mean, heavyweights, it's a KO. Now you got to get your rest in, and it sets you back, especially when you're calling people out like the Black Beast.
Well, I think what happened too was he took 4 hard leg kicks. And so I think he also thought, I have a chance to finish him. I smell blood in the water. So I don't fault him too much. He was being a little hard on himself with, you know, rookie mistake or whatever. But what can you do? I mean, you've been getting kicked in the leg hard. You just hurt him. a lot of people would say if he laid off him, hey, what are you doing? You're letting him get back in the fight. You know, maybe, I don't know. So I just think, you know, he got clipped and that's where the mistake was. But I don't think he rushed in too early or anything like that. I think that's kind of what you're supposed to do when you have an injured fighter. But whatever, man, at heavyweight, any of them paws that hit you could be, you know, it could end the fight. So it's almost worthless to analyze heavyweight fights at times. But regardless, Tai Tuivasa wins. Good for him. How about all those shoeys, man, that he did? About five times this weekend when I was driving to Mandalay Bay or coming back or taking out the trash, I just kept laughing at the shoey where he wound up spitting out some of Dustin Poirier's sauce along with the beer. And then he had one guy just pouring beer from, you know, like the next floor up. And he really played along with the crowd great. He really went out of his way to have some fun with the shoey on the top of the octagon. He really put a smile on my face on Saturday.
He told the media that before the fight, his goal was to do every single one that was offered to him on the way back out. But the last one, I don't know if you can blame that guy, because he had the shoe, he had the beer, and he had the hot sauce, and he did it right in front of him. But I think Tai Tuivasa was looking the other way as it happened. So when he came back and he drank it and he kind of gave a look like, what the fuck was that? I just think he missed it. But the guy did it right in front of him. It's not like he peeked behind and poured it in like he was trying to drug him or anything. He did it right in front of him. He just didn't see it. But, yeah, if you don't know that's coming, I don't know how hot Dustin Poirier's hot sauce is, but it's going to have a weird taste, you know, especially if it's coming from a stranger out of a shoe. Like, you got to be tripping a little bit.
One guy had what looked like Nike's custom made. You know how you got a Nike ID and you could fill in the colors. It looked like – he had a zany outfit, like a color, like, you know, like this or whatever. I remember it had like a pinkish blue, yellow. I think it was a Nike, and I couldn't believe it because I thought, that's a nice shoe, man. Like, don't do a shoey with that one. But he was in the moment. Maybe he's got some money, and he can afford to do it. But, oh, man, I was laughing my ass off, goes, laughing my ass off at those shoeys, and that's just his thing, and I love it. He could be uber popular if he just keeps cranking out wins just because of that shoey alone. That's done.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, imagine if you don't know what a shoey is, and that's just your first time watching, you're thinking, who's this barbarian out there? Like, what is with this guy?
It does seem like primal, man. Irene Aldana defeated Yana Kunitskaya. Beautiful left hook, puts her down, finishes her up with some ground and pound. What do you think of that fight?
I thought, you know, I want to give Yana Kunitskaya some credit. She really went after it. She came forward that whole fight. She threw a lot of strikes, but she just got caught. And who's to say that if that fight goes on more, it doesn't happen eventually? But I thought she gave it her all in that fight. And I think she could still shore things up and be in better situations in the future. Aldana got the win, but she didn't make weight. So it's just one of those things where, you know, you're happy you got the win, but you lost some money here. And who knows the way the matchmakers, the fans take that. Your opponent, Yana Kunitskaya, has two fights where somebody has missed weight against her. So she has that going for her. But it was an interesting fight. It was good.
Yeah, I liked it too. And I thought the fight wasn't going to be as exciting as it turned out to be. Both ladies definitely came to compete. So I wouldn't hold it too much against even the losing party. If she's ready to fight again at some point soon, let's rebook her. A lot of times I think fighters in a losing effort, the matchmakers are kind of put you down to the bottom of a list, you know, going to work and featuring you again. But I thought both ladies competed well. Unfortunate about the Aldana not making weight, but I think she said it was her first time, so I was telling Goz on Saturday, you're not supposed to ever miss weight, but I guess if you're going to do it, I think one is forgivable, you know. Two, and it starts to really become a problem, you really need to explore maybe going to a different weight class. I don't know. All right, I don't want to spend too much time on this one, but Travis Fulton, if you've ever wondered who has fought the most in MMA, a guy named Travis Fulton had over 300 fights, if I'm not mistaken. And he died over the weekend, an apparent suicide. He was in a jail cell, and he was they found him hanging. So, I mean, some of you might be saying, well, duh, he killed himself. Well, yeah, but legally, I think you have to go through the process. Somebody could break into your cell. I mean, you know how it is back there. Anything can happen and put you in that situation, you know. But it does appear to look that way. But when you dig into what led him to get there and some of the bad that he's done in his life, again, charges that have come forward, hadn't really had his day in court, but even that and other problems, you just realize, man, this was not an upstanding citizen of the United States. So used to always know the answer to that trivia question, you know, who fought the most in MMA, Travis Fulton, how many fights? And you had a crazy record, but I didn't know this side of him. So anyway, Ronda Rousey, I wouldn't say she showed support for Conor McGregor in terms of how he acted and whether he was acting as a decent human being or not. She had more profound words to say about, wow, just the moment of having your leg broken and already thinking forward towards your next fight. She gave him props there. Now, I think others would say, hey, fuck all that. What about the fact that he's being disrespectful? You know, maybe focus in on that. So people were giving her a hard time. But what did you think of her tweet, her message to Conor, which he already thanked her for?
Mm-hmm. I mean, she's a big name in the sport. She's a person that can do similar things that Conor McGregor can do, right? Like get people's attention. The UFC gave her her backing. Okay. I mean, yeah, there are things that you can admire about Conor's spirit after the fight, wanting to get back in there. You're kind of supposed to be that way, I think, though. But I don't know that that's the tweet you send out after the things. Right.
That's so. Like the big thing on my mind, you know, in terms of the fight itself. And then, you know, his antics post fight, maybe wishing him well, but you're kind of skipping over some important stuff, you know, and maybe that was her intent was if I address the other stuff, I'm not going to have good things to say, but let me just back a fellow fighter who lost the big fight. I've been there. This is a difficult moment. So let me find something that I can say, who knows? We still always wish Ronda the best. She did a lot for the sport. She did a lot for women's MMA. And the few times that we had her on the show, she was actually very pleasant. I think we got Ronda before she became famous and powerful. And
same with Conor.
That all these fighters got. Yeah, I was listening to the first two interviews that we had Conor on last week. Sounded so much different. I mean, I remember just thinking, man, what a charming fella, you know? And to see him now, the way he's like so furious and anger and I don't know, man. Whatever. That's what it does to you. You might have a lot of zeros on the bank account, but you definitely change as a person. Dustin Poirier joins an exclusive club. He has now won 20 times in the UFC. He joins Cowboy Cerrone, Jim Miller, and one other fella, but my page froze here. But 20 wins is pretty amazing. This is what I do know. Whoever the other fellow might be, none of them have won a world title. Only Dustin Poirier has a major world title. He was a UFC interim champion. So I know Miller and Cerrone didn't reach that level. And if I can unfreeze here in a second, I'll tell you who the third one is. But 20 wins, Dustin Poirier is very, very amazing. Damian Maia, here we go. Cerrone, 23. Maia, 22. Miller, 21. And now Poirier. With 20.
Wow. The Diamond Club.
He's 12-2 since moving up to lightweight in April of 2015. His only losses were to Khabib Nurmagomedov and Michael Johnson. And let's see here. Since returning to the UFC's lightweight division, all of his stoppage victories have been via knockout. His 8 knockout victories in UFC lightweight competition are the most in individual history. And McGregor suffered losses for the first time. These are fun facts and figures by Mike Bond. He always has a really, really nice article when he breaks that down. I also want to give a shout out to John Morgan. He had an opinion article that he put out early Sunday morning talking about McGregor and what he needs to do, man, to really take a good look in the mirror and just reconstruct yourself as a person, as a human being first, and then as a fighter. So shout out to John. I thought he did a great job with that.
Yeah.
And then finally, RDA giving a little bit of humble pie to Conor McGregor. He took a picture of the foot of Conor McGregor's foot. And if you'll recall, on one of the final embeds, they almost got into it. I think it was embedded six, because RDA weighed in. He was the backup for this main event. He weighed in successfully, 156. But they saw each other in passing, and so it was on the sixth embedded. But then, you know, McGregor brings up the fact you hurt your toe, you broke your toe, and you bottled it, you choked. You know, but you could tell these guys definitely don't exchange Christmas cards. And now RDA is like, well, now look who broke their foot, you know. And so he's giving it to him. A lot of fighters are giving it to Conor McGregor. Floyd Mayweather's revealing that he bet $35,000 on Dustin Poirier. He put out the ticket. It's coming back in many ways, isn't it?
I thought that – this is just me being dumb, but I thought $35,000 was a dumb bet. Like, I don't know. That's such an odd number, you know, like for a guy like Floyd. Like, I picture something like that's either going to be like $100,000 or $50,000 or as low as $10,000 or something. But 35 just seemed odd. That just seems like this is what was lying around. So I just threw it in there.
Well, it was 50 to win 35. So he risked 50 G's.
Oh, okay.
35. Maybe the Circa, which the ticket says Circa, which is a new hotel in Las Vegas. Maybe it had a little 50, or maybe Floyd has learned from the past, because word around town is that he's, you know, his overall betting career hasn't been as what he portrays. He only posts the winning tickets. Not many of us run to social media to post losing tickets either, but I think the deal is, if you're going to post your winning tickets, at least from time to time, acknowledge that you don't win them all, right? And I think that's something that bothers some people. Like, I posted me winning Keno the other day. It was $120, but I'm clean many times on this show and said I got my ass handed to me too. I'm not always just all I pick is winners. All I pick is winners. I'm 96-2 in the last two. No, come on, nobody is. Otherwise, they wouldn't keep building hotels like the Circa. So sure. Yeah, check out all this stuff on MMA Junkie. You know, RDA giving it to McGregor or Floyd, or Twitter reactions is always pretty cool as well. John Kavanaugh, I think, really, really, I don't like his stance on, he liked where things were headed, and in round two, this fight was going to end. He did an Instagram live chat with Laura Sanko. You know, if he was talking about UFC 257, shit, he's spot on. McGregor won that round, 10-9. And he was doing some good stuff, and then he lost in round two. But I wouldn't think he was crazy if that was a quote from UFC 257. But two judges had it 10-8 for Dustin Poirier. I disagree with that, by the way. I thought it was a 10-9 round, not an 8 round. But they had it 10-8. And as the fight goes, I think Dustin gets even stronger. So with no ankle break or anything like that, I would think that the – live betting would have been in favor of Poirier, and I think most people would have been in favor of it's probably becoming a Poirier fight. So going back to what you said, you know, people that enabled McGregor, Jesus, I mean, I know you want to pick your guy up, but again, there's still ways to phrase it so that you don't come off sounding like you're crazy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know you got to back your guy up, but you got to be logical too.
Right. This is a former coach of the year. I think they've been nominated for gym of the year, and he's backing up a fighter of the year. We get it, man. They're good. They're good over there, you know, but come on. At the same time, like, you got to be somewhat realistic here, you know, and I thought they were one of the camps that kind of kept that fresh, even in losses, humble in defeat, you know, win or learn. Like, what's happening?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right. Let's get out of here. We'll do some more of the finishing up of this card on Thursday's show. We'll talk about a little bit about Condit and Griffin and the rest of that prelims, but we've already gone over 10 minutes. We got other stuff that Mondays are busy for us is what I'm trying to say. But I do want to say this. Thank you again to all you that tuned in for our UFC 264 watch along. We enjoy spending our Saturday night with you. And lastly, the attendance on Saturday night was 20,062. Total gate was just shy of 16 million. That's enormous, man. That's a big gate. Sean O'Malley and Chris Moutinho got 75,000 for fight of the night. Tai Tuivasa and Dricus Duplessis got performance of the night. Somebody brought up Irene Aldana's name as a possible performance of the night, and Dana said, "Yeah, you're right. I feel terrible. I'm gonna write her a check." And then you heard a whisper, "She missed weight." So he's put himself in a position where who knows what he's gonna do. Maybe he still cuts her that check. But for those that don't, when you miss weight, you make yourself ineligible for a bonus. So maybe that's why she didn't get it. Anyhow, we'll leave you with that. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. We got you covered in our ability to cover the sport of mixed martial arts better than anybody. We got Bellator this week. We got UFC again, back at Apex. So check it out. I made a lot of people download the app this week, and I ran into some cool people. Shout out to Spam. That's Sam and Pam from North Carolina. Shout out to Alex and Amir from Chicago. Ran into those fools over at the Park MGM. Saw Dave Manley, and I saw a lovely couple, Leo and Vanessa, at Diablo's. They love MMA Junkie. This was their first event. They went to UFC 264. Saved up a lot of money, went, had a blast, and that was their first event ever, and they plan on going back. Anyway, we are out of here, folks. Go out there and be a champion.